Thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session today, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Secretary Duncan. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you so much, and thanks to all of you for joining us this afternoon. The new academic year always is an exciting time filled with both promise and great opportunity. But this year, you, your faculty, and your staff may face a unique challenge. The H1N1 flu virus is spreading in the United States and elsewhere. Many young, seemingly healthy individuals are contracting the virus. College students are one of the high-risk groups, as you well know. My team has been working very closely with the CDC, HHS, and DHS to prepare thoughtful guidance for colleges and universities. We set out to make our guidance balanced, measured, and as clear and concise as possible. Most importantly, it reflects the best science available. The guidance we're releasing today explains the steps you should take to treat students who contract H1N1 and ones to prevent the spread of the virus on your campus. Much of it is common sense. Your maintenance staff need to redouble their efforts to clean surfaces such as sinks, elevator buttons, and classroom desks. You need to encourage students to clean such commonly used items in their dorm rooms, such as doorknobs, keyboards, and remote controls. You need to encourage ill students to stay in their dorm rooms until they have been free of a fever for at least 24 hours. They should ask a friend or a roommate to care for them by bringing in meals and any potential medication. You should review your personnel policies and remove any incentive for employees to return to work before they have fully recovered from any virus. And all colleges and universities should be taking these steps now. But you need to be prepared in case a large number of students on your campus contract H1N1. You may need to go beyond preventative steps. The guidance explains what you need to do if H1N1 spreads farther than it did last spring. I want to thank all of you for the work you have done to help your students. I know that your institutions of learning and that teaching is absolutely your top priority. But I also know that you are committed to ensuring the health and safety of all of your students. The upcoming academic year may be a challenging one because of H1N1. My department, HHS, CDC, and other health officials are committed to working with you to make sure your students are healthy and can continue their education throughout the year. This time I want to turn it over to someone who's been just a phenomenal partner and has worked extraordinarily hard, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Secretary Sebelius.
Well, thank you, Arnie, Secretary Duncan, and I appreciate the opportunity to join this call for the higher education world. We've got a CDC expert on the phone with us who will follow me, but before I turn it over to Dr. Beth Bell, I want to make a couple of comments about what we're seeking to accomplish. We know that colleges and universities are concerned about safety and security of your students, so we want to share with you the best information from the science that we have. And we know from the experience in the spring and the summer that college students are one of the population groups more likely to come down with the virus. Also, we know that these young Americans present special challenges. I know that personally because I'm the mother of a 25 and a 28-year-old, so these folks are not used to being sick. Unlike their younger siblings, they probably haven't had an annual vaccination in a while. And with their parents not around, as many of them are thrilled, to tell them to get a flu shot, they may not pay attention. So your help and support in promoting vaccination when it becomes available is really critical. Also, simple steps. As Arnie said, we've learned a couple of things, and I think the two things to remember are hands and home. Anything we can do to keep hands from spreading germs is important. So frequent hand washing, cleaning surfaces, covering coughs or sneezes with a sleeve instead of a hands is a good idea, and staying home when you're sick, isolating yourself and trying to stay out of traffic. We're also doing some sort of non-traditional things to try and reach this important population. so-called viral marketing, getting the flu message out in non-traditional ways. We've got widgets and buttons available to download from flu.gov. And for those colleges and universities that have a system-wide website, it would be a great idea if you would use our widget on your website so you help us drive the message about vaccination and mitigation of the flu. We've already had some preliminary meetings with ESPN to talk about them being partners driving the message through their sports channel and their computer channel. We're reaching out to college students through Facebook and Twitter so they can learn what to do about the flu and hopefully pass those tips along to their social networks. And just before midnight on Monday, we took the last entry in our nationwide contest to submit the best 15, 30, or 60-second PSA. We got several hundred applicants and submissions over YouTube, but we thought a video hopefully made by young people, reaching out to young people, might be the best way, and the winner will be offered a $2,500 gift certificate and exposure on not only federal websites but national TV. So we hope this will catch college students' attention. Right now, we think we're on track, monitoring the virus closely across the country, working hard to get the vaccine ready to go, and all indicators point to availability by mid-October. So you will have some outreach from your state and local officials about partnering in vaccine distribution and getting shots in people's arms. We're continuing to work with the international community, and I would suggest that some monitoring be done for students who are heading abroad to study, because that's going to be an important piece of this puzzle. www.flu.gov is the universal website. It will be updated. Certainly contact with county health officials will be very helpful, because what we saw this spring is that the virus outbreak can be very heavy in one area and very light in others. So it's going to be hard to monitor that uniformly across the country. The best information on the severity of the outbreak and the numbers involved are going to come from your local area. So thank you again for joining us today, for being a partner in this. We know there's a lot of work to be done to make sure that college students, among others, are safe and secure. And I want to call on Dr. Beth Bell now to give some specifics on the higher ed guidance.
Thank you very much, Secretary Sebelius. I will just spend a couple of minutes really echoing some of the things that both Secretary Duncan and Secretary Sebelius have highlighted, and then maybe go into a little bit more detail about some of the specifics of some aspects of the guidance. As you heard, this guidance aims to help decrease the spread of flu among students, faculty, and staff of institutions of higher education, while also at the same time limiting disruption of day-to-day activities and the vital academic work that goes on in these institutions. Some of the most important actions to take now are things that you've already heard about, hand hygiene, encouraging hand washing, and also making soap and water and alcohol and hand gels available, respiratory etiquette, making sure that students understand how to cover their cough, self-isolation, and that's something that I'm going to say a little bit more about, because the guidance does provide some particular strategies for self-isolation, and vaccination, as you heard, when the H1N1 vaccine becomes available, as we're expecting in mid-October. The guidance provides a menu of strategies and tools that institutions can use and sort of select and tailor for unique circumstances and conditions in their area. And as you heard, it recommends actions to take now, but also suggests some strategies to consider if the flu starts causing more severe disease than what we're seeing now. So a couple of things that I was going to provide a little bit more detail about. The first is a few more words about self-isolation. The idea here is that one of the most important strategies is to separate sick people from well people as soon as possible and to find ways to help them remain in self-isolation and away from healthy people throughout the recommended period, as you heard from Secretary Duncan, until 24 hours after the resolution of fever without the use of fever reducing medications. So in this guidance, we've suggest some strategies for self-isolation which take into account the special circumstances in colleges and universities where many students live in residence. The guidance recommends that students, faculty, and staff, as part of the, self-isolation, if they're ill, that they not go to classes, that they stay away from healthy people, and as I say, that they remain in self-isolation. So for students in residence, there are some suggestions in terms of ways that this can be done by self-isolation in dorm rooms or a number of other locations. For students who live relatively close to campus but are in residence, the guidance suggests returning home for the recommended period. And for students who are not in residence, of course, the guidance recommends that they stay away from campus while they're ill. There are a number of other details about other kinds of suggested self-isolation strategies, including finding common areas where ill students who can't self-isolate could be cohorted in the guidance. The second thing I wanted to provide a little bit more detail about is related to something that Secretary Duncan mentioned about early medical evaluation and early treatment of ill people who are at high risk of complications from the flu, because we know that early treatment is effective in preventing complications in people at high risk. And we're wanting to encourage in the guidance that students, faculty, and staff check with their healthcare provider to find out if they have a condition that would put them at higher risk. We think that it's certainly possible that many students may not actually be aware of these groups at higher risk, and we're encouraging institutions to try to promote that sort of awareness. The guidance suggests that institutions should act now to revise and update their response plans, and also, as Secretary Sebelius mentioned, to strengthen and renew their partnerships with local public health officials and others in the community in order to plan for the upcoming season and understand how they're going to get information about local conditions and use local public health to help guide them when in making some of these decisions. CDC and its partners will continue to monitor the spread of flu, the severity of the illness it's causing, and whether the virus is changing. And we, of course, will be providing updates on what we learn, and we'll be revising our guidance as needed. Students, faculty, and staff at all institutions of higher education, as you heard from Secretary Sebelius, the place to go is www.flu.gov. Thank you very much.
We'd like to open it up for questions now.
And if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please record your name when prompted. Your name is required. If you need to withdraw your request, press star 2. There'll be one moment for the first question. And the first question comes from James Turner. Your line is open.
Yes. Thank you very much. This is Dr. Jim Turner. I'm president of the American College Health Association and direct the Student Health Service at the University of Virginia. And I thank you very much for the information that you've provided today. And Secretary Sebelius, I've had the opportunity to work with CDC over the years, and you have an absolutely splendid staff. And as an American, we're lucky to have them. So. And I know Beth Bell, she's done a great job, so thank you very much. I do have a brief comment. The American College Health Association is going to develop a surveillance system in the next couple weeks, and we hope to be able to provide CDC with a lot more accurate information about how the disease is evolving on college campuses. And I've been in contact with surveillance people at CDC, and we'll roll that out, and hopefully that will give you a much better sense of what's going on our college campuses. But I do have my question has to do with the vaccine availability. We're hearing mid-October, but we understand the numbers are going to be lower than initially anticipated. And as you can imagine, planning to vaccinate, say, 21,000 students on my campus, it's a massive undertaking. And I'm hoping perhaps I could suggest that you keep the public well apprised of anticipated arrival of vaccine several weeks in advance, because it's real hard to pull together the nursing staff and the resources to do this. And is that something that you're considering doing?
It absolutely is something, Dr. Turner, and I appreciate the logistical challenge of trying to anticipate a massive vaccination campaign and trying to make sure that you're going to actually have vaccine to put in people's arms. We, as you know, the preliminary reports came back with what I would suggest are slightly lower numbers, but frankly, we're working with five different manufacturers, and this is very much a work in progress in terms of what exactly, how many courses we're going to have on what precise date. But there will be several markers along the way. We're working very closely with particularly states, health planners and others, because a lot of this will be driven through the state system in terms of where the distribution is going to go and how fast it's going to go. So we very much intend to keep you updated on a regular basis. And as we get more precise information, which is likely to come, you know, in mid-September, I would suggest that we'll know much more precisely, you know, how much can come, in what kind of orders, where it's going to go, so you won't do planning in vain. You'll know you'll have the vaccine to do the immunization.
Thank you very much.
Let's see if we have any additional questions.
Please press star one. And we have a question from Nancy Corser. Your line is open.
Thank you so much. In the current recommendations and guidance on the website, it talks about special concerns within health profession schools. At our college, we have over 22 health professions, and we are hearing word that from our clinical agencies that the CDC has said that all health care providers must be vaccinated by December 1st. We're being told that our students, unless all of them are vaccinated, that they will be banned from our clinical facilities. I have not seen that in any of the recommendations. Can you provide me whether that's an update that's coming?
Handle that?
Some misinformation that you've received. We had the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices met at the end of July and made recommendations for groups that should be in the first 159 million for whom vaccine is recommended. Vaccination is a voluntary program, and certainly healthcare providers are in that first group for whom vaccination is recommended. But that's the state of affairs, and the other kind of things that you've heard, as I say, whoever told you that, I guess, is misinformed. This is a voluntary program, as I say, with recommended groups for vaccination.
One of the things, this is Kathleen Sebelius, and one of the things I might add to that is that what we're seeing right now is a presentation fairly similar to seasonal flu. It's fairly alarming to me that in the seasonal flu uptake, healthcare workers still are at about 40%, in spite of the fact that that's been advertised and promoted for years. So I have never heard any discussion of, first of all, mandatory healthcare worker vaccination, and certainly nothing linked to banning people. But I think trying to get the word out that this is a population we think is potentially at high risk given their interface with sick folks, and that it would be a great idea to get to the front of the line is something that we want to promote. One thing I should mention is that seasonal flu vaccine is going to be available right now, and certainly by Labor Day should be widely available. And if there are, again, faculty members, vulnerable populations, students at risk who should be getting seasonal flu, beginning to promote that immediately is also a good idea, so we make sure that that vaccination takes place and that these two don't mix.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from James Lyons.
Yes, good afternoon, and I want to thank all of you for this briefing. I'm James Lyons. I'm Secretary of Higher Education for the state of Maryland. My question is, how do you plan to monitor what is going on across the country in order to keep your website kind of up to date with the most current information? And how might state coordinating boards like ours be of assistance to you?
Well, that's a great question. We are currently working on an enhanced surveillance system. We have a number of partners who have major health plans, operations throughout much of the country who can give us sort of real-time information as their members access services. We are looking at enhancing the surveillance that CDC does in various parts of the country. So our hope is to have a much more, frankly, robust and real-time reporting system that can monitor with much more accuracy what we saw this spring, which was, you know, in some parts of the country, the disease was very prevalent and widely spread, and in others there were very mild and infrequent cases. So I think the kind of situation that you've talked about, that Dr. Turner talked about with getting information back from universities fed into the CDC monitoring system is enormously helpful. We're trying to get as much information into the central source so we can turn around and pull it in, send it back out, or have it available regularly. Dr. Bell, I don't know if you have other...
I think, Secretary Sebelius, you've given quite a robust and accurate description. To summarize, I think, you know, we have we are looking to get information in from many different sources in many different modalities and also to monitor many different things. So flu-like illness, visits to doctors for flu-like illness, hospitalizations, deaths. School things that are happening in schools. We appreciate Dr. Turner's contribution and the virus, how the virus is changing, what's going on in other parts of the world. And so we have a sort of lots of different kinds of information coming in from many different sources. We there's a part of the CDC website called FluView, which gives a little bit of gives a snapshot from week to week of how things are going around the country, and we have many different ways of sort of fitting all these pieces of the puzzle together, and we hope to be able to do that, as Secretary Sebelius says, with sort of more robust and with more precision, given this business that there may be different things happening in different parts of the country at any time, so that we can provide the best information and also the most up-to-date and the best science-based guidance that we can.
All right. Well, we need to wrap up, folks. I know there are some remaining questions, and we can get those answered for you. A few things. Flu.gov is an excellent resource, and this afternoon you will have the guidance, both the technical version or sort of distilled version, as well as an outstanding communications toolkit that CDC has put together. Has everything from sort of at-a-glance guidance to posters you can put in campus restrooms and buildings and things like that. It's a really great resource, and I recommend it. For those of you who are membership associations, please share this with your members. We really rely on you to get this word out. I want to thank particularly the American College Health Association for your engagement on this. If there are lingering questions, Department of Education can help at least funnel them to the right folks at flu@ed.gov, flu@ed.gov. We will have a recording of this call available on our website later this afternoon. We'll have a transcript at some point, too, so you can share that with folks. And with that, I want to thank our secretaries, Duncan and Sebelius, for participating in the call, and Dr. Bell at CDC. These agencies have been great partners, and we appreciate the higher education community also being a partner on this, and we will be in touch. Thanks so much for joining us.
And that concludes today's call. Please disconnect your lines at this time.